Adam has written an incredible book called Permission to Be Black. You should all pick it up at the back or online with Marcus Books or wherever else. Adam has a master's of doctorate of education. You are Dr. Adam, aren't you? And a master's of divinity. And he is a filmmaker and a creative and a chaplain and a public theologian, and has been encountering and engaging the wonderful story of understanding Jesus in first century Jewish context. And when I get to sit and chat with Adam online, it feels like we're sitting at the feet of Rabbi Jesus together and getting to listen in a little bit and try to catch a little bit of that dust. So I'm deeply grateful that Adam is with us today.
And we have another brother in Christ, Lecrae, who is actually from California, right? A little bit. Got a little bit of California in him. That's right. Okay. Yes. So welcome home. We are so glad to have you here. We hope you come back. But the man does not need that much of an introduction. Lecrae has had numerous albums, some mixtapes. He recently this week found out his latest album, Reconstruction, it was nominated for 2 Grammy Awards for song and album. Yes. His 2014 album, Anomaly, debuted at number 1 on the Billboard charts and was the first Christian-themed album to do so. Not only is Lecrae a rapper, on his website it says that he is a kid raised in hip-hop culture who came to know Jesus. So not only is he a rapper, he's also a podcaster, he's an actor, he's an entrepreneur, he is a businessman. What don't you do? He does it. Okay, well, but we, that, yes, yes, and Lois also. So he does not need much of an introduction, but we are so happy to have you here. Thank you for coming. Thank you for stopping by our Sparky space.
Would you all please join us up here? Thank you.
Good evening. How y'all doing? Nice. Felt like y'all should clap again. man. So listen, humble to be here. Lecrae and I, we're just going to have a conversation. Y'all get to listen in. I do want to say, Lecrae's not going to tell you this, but we have a long time friendship. And when we did DNA tests, I found out that he has some Jewish in his... And I go, oh, that's why you're so successful. Shout out to that blessing. So now he's discovering that through the...
Yeah, it's a small percentage. But, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, so I'll take it. We're going to have a discussion about faith, culture, and why we believe Jesus being centered in the Hebraic language, culture, idioms is so important. All right? By a show of hands, I'm going to see where my crowd is. Anybody, stay with me. Anybody seen Boys in the Hood? Okay. All right. Anybody seen Sound of Music? Oh, okay. And Wizard of Oz. All right, so this illustration to play. Imagine if you seen Boys in the Hood, Sound of Music, Wizard of Oz, but only the last 50 minutes. Right? You studied it, you memorized it, right? And then someone comes and says, hey, in order to appreciate it, why don't you watch the entire movie? And then you say back to them, I don't need to. That's what we're talking about today in America.
That's America.
A lot of us say we don't need to study what we would call the Old Testament. We only need to know the last 50 minutes of the story. But in order to be a potent disciple of Christ, we know we need to watch the whole film.
That's good.
So how would you speak to that, Lecrae?
Well, just to give you some background from me personally, first of all, I wasn't raised in a Christian household. So when I did meet Christ, you know, it was through your nominal kind of Western evangelical organization. And obviously there was a lot of highlight on Jesus, which is great, the New Testament, which is great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was kind of like the Psalms, you know, when you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And then like Genesis, maybe Exodus story.
Right.
All that other stuff is kind of like, who reads Lamentations? Like, I don't know. Who's going to read Leviticus? It's there, but what's the point of it?
Yeah.
And I think as we begin to journey on our walk with the Lord, there's some things that come up that you start to wrestle with and you start to have questions about, but oftentimes we don't dig deep enough. It's almost like you see something's in there, but you don't quite know what it is because no one else is caring to dig. So another way I always articulate it is, my grandmother is, she is from Texas, right? East Texas.
All right.
So that is where my family originates from, East Texas. And they have this recipe for pound cake, right? It's an East Texas recipe. But for whatever reason, by the time it got to my sister, my grandmother said, "This ain't the cake. This is not the same cake." And what had happened was my sister had just felt like it's not that deep to have the exact piece. Like, who reads Leviticus anyway? You know, a pinch of sugar, a dash of sugar. Mm-hmm. It's not that deep. And I would say that is the state of us in America right now. Is this ain't the same cake.
Yeah. Yeah, let's... Yeah, come on, snap on that. Yeah, yeah. Well, let's kind of talk about our journey, right? Did you grow up in the suburbs? Was everything good for you? Like, I want people to understand your background in order for them to understand the journey.
No, I did. I give you a drive-by crash history course on my journey. Grew up. Very dysfunctional family. My grandmother, was kind of kicked out at 13 because she got pregnant at 14, had 12 kids, had to give my mother away because she just could not sustain taking care of these kids. Mm-hmm. So my mother grew up in a broken family, didn't know her father. She gets pregnant with me and is she's trying to do better. Mm-hmm. And so she tries to stay with my dad, but he ends up, he's selling drugs, then becoming a drug addict, no longer in my life, single parent, and, just spent a lot of time trying to find male role models in, a broken, disenfranchised environment. So that's the origin. And then I was a striver to beat my dad, right? To break a cycle. I didn't want to be him. So I was strive, got a full scholarship to the University of North Texas. And
what was that scholarship on?
Theater.
See, look at this. Full scholarship of theater, y'all.
That's right.
Very talented man, right?
Yeah, theater. and the irony of that is because of Tupac, because I heard he was a good actor and he was in theater class. So I said, I'm going to do theater. Tupac did theater. Yeah. Who's also from the Bay, by the way. Shout out to Tupac. End up in college because of a friend of mine. I didn't know many people, but one young lady invited me to a Bible study. Mm-hmm. I go to the Bible study. I would go to anything at that point in time. I go to Rastafarianism. I was just exploring. It's college. Yeah. So I went to the Bible study, and I was, I was a little bit embarrassed at how little I knew. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the names. Everyone knew the names. I was in Texas now. Now it's the Bible Belt, so they knew who Jeremiah was. I didn't.
Yeah. But you grew up, not to breeze past it.
Yeah.
But talk more about, just so you understand when we get to Jesus and culture. Your mother schooled you kind of like the Black Panthers. Kind of talk about that. What you were steeped in.
Yeah, so my mother... grew up in Third Ward, Houston, Texas. She was fed lunch by the Black Panthers because she couldn't afford food. They would eat red clay to keep their stomach satiated. So the Black Panthers to her were a source of light and yeah. hope. And she was a part of that, the free breakfast program. So she would go to a place called the Shape Center in Houston, mm-hmm. Texas, where they taught her her history, her ethnicity, her origins, her roots. So she was very active, mm-hmm. Grew up being very active as far as being a part of the civil rights movement in terms of like, not, she was a kid, but what I'm saying is she was a supporter
yeah.
And taught me this, had me reading W.E.B. Du Bois, yeah. Soul of Black Folks as a mm-hmm. kid, had me reading Eldridge Cleaver, Soul on Ice as a kid,
yeah.
Just very adamant about me learning and understanding. Education was our way out of the ghetto as far as she was concerned. Yeah. So
just so y'all understand, so y'all hear, and if I'm hearing it correctly, that's not an easy bridge to go from what you grew up in to
no.
just Jesus.
No.
Right. So now kind of talk about then what was that transition?
Well, to me, Christianity was the weak person's faith.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like that's grandma's religion, and that's what you do when you're, you know, it's for simpletons.
Yeah.
It's for for not non-educated people who just are looking for hope. And I was a thinker and a processor. So there's a story in scripture of Naaman, who was asked to cure his leprosy, to dip himself in. He was like, this is too simple. Like, yeah. there's got to be a more complicated way to get rid of this leprosy. And that's yeah. kind of my thought process about God, is this Christian thing seems too simple. My mother also was raised in a very legalistic church environment. So she wanted to save me from the perils of the legalism that she grew up in, mm. not being able to wear pants. And I mean, like first of all, the church she grew up in would just, all of them would roll over in their grave to be in this building right now. Like, this breaks every stereotype. So she didn't raise me in church because she didn't want me to be corrupted, so yeah. to speak, by the church hurt. So it was mostly about education, about learning.
Yeah. So you get to UNT what year?
My freshman year? What do you mean? Like what year?
Yeah,
like
you two, there
the 1998.
Yeah. And then you can go to Tennessee, TSU.
Go to Tennessee. Yep.
Yeah. And then you come back and with you.
Come back. Yeah.
What year was that?
01.
Okay. Yeah. 01, 02.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
We meet each other in 2003.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. So here's when I want to fill in some gaps. All right. So you'll see Lecrae. You know, the star, Grammys, success, and to the world, it looks like, man, it was this, like, strategic plan. But being a friend over this long haul, stay with me, over this long haul, I really saw, because I want to kind of dispel some things that some of y'all I could sense are in the crowd. Over this long haul, what I saw the Lord use was a willing heart. And I think oftentimes we feel like we're left behind or the Lord can't use us because we don't have top-level education. But what I saw with Lecrae, Ben Washer, Trip Lee, Tadashi, Sho, and those guys is that they had a willing heart for what they knew of Jesus, and the Lord magnified that. And then now I feel like the Lord is honoring that and filling in gaps with the Greek, Hebrew history, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're in this room, you're like, man, I don't have the resources. I don't have the microphone. I've seen this dude rap in front of five people in a terrible sound system, sleeping on floors.
Karaoke machine.
Karaoke machine. So I want to encourage y'all that the Lord is always looking for a willing heart. He's not looking for you to have the world's tools for him to use you.
That's good. That's right? Good. That's really good.
So that's where we met each other. Come on, y'all snap on that.
Yeah.
So it really is a blessing to be along for the journey. So we meet in like 2003,
mm-hmm.
and at that time you was transitioning out of selling cable,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And I remember you said like, yo, I just feel like the Lord has called me to proclaim his message through music, and it was a faith step. Mm-hmm. So kind of talk about what were you feeling at that time? Because you couldn't look at a manual and go like, hey, these people did this, they got successful. I remember y'all were writing support letters to be music missionaries. So kind of talk about that. This is before like iTunes, YouTube.
You gotta understand, okay? First of all, I'm remembering some of this stuff now. But this is the irony, or the crazy part. And Adam is right in terms of taking a leap of faith. You got to understand, like, my family grew up in abject poverty. My mother, for me to get this scholarship was like the crown jewel of just like, oh my goodness. And for me to graduate and say, Mom, I'm going to be a rapper for Jesus.
Yeah, understand that. Reading W.E.B. Du Bois.
Right. Like, you are ruining the legacy. We worked too hard for this. So, you know, to go down that trajectory, it was like the encounter, the existential encounter that I had with Christ mm-hmm. was so powerful that I would throw away all conventional wisdom mm-hmm. to make this decision. Mm-hmm. And that's the state of being that I was in, was like, I know he's real. I know that this is the direction I feel called to move in. And I understand, Mom, this makes no sense. She thought I was in a cult. Yeah. And but I'm telling you, I've had this encounter that I cannot fully articulate. And, you know, it was off to the races, man. So, yes, I totally agree. That it is just a willing heart. I had no, I didn't, there was no such thing as like a, there was no record label for Christian mm-hmm. rap. Like it was, like it wasn't a mm-hmm. thing. It was like, the things that I have been able to accomplish were not in my mind.
Yeah.
The only thing I thought was, can I pay my $500 a month rent yeah. rapping for Jesus? That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Lord blessed that, y'all. He did. He used that. So, again, I want y'all to be encouraged. If you're in this room and you're saying, hey, Lord, what do you have for me? He has for you himself. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Let him open up the doors as he sees fit. He has for you himself. So just honored to take that journey. Kind of talk about, I've always seen you as one who is a student mm-hmm. and one who is always wanting to run that race with a fire, mm-hmm. like you'd never settle. And in your journey, you went from, you know, like very passionate. You would say in some of your albums, like the Real Talk, After the Music Stops, Rebel, that let's just say it's like, man, you had these hard stances, mm-hmm. and then you kind of moved like, okay, I don't know if the stances are as hard.
Yeah.
But then you kind of, in that deconstruction, right, you kind of rebooted and you reconstructed.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of talk about that journey of why did you start questioning mm-hmm. and how did you get back?
That's a great question. I think this is specifically for Christians, right, but I think a lot of people go through this, where you go through an awakening, where you realize something. It's like, oh my goodness, I never knew this. You meet God. After awakening comes growth. You need to change your mental maps. Like, everything that I ever knew, I need to reorient and reorganize. And after growth comes productivity. How can I then now live out these things that I've learned? And, you know, I see it like with my vegan friends. They do this all the time. It's like, oh my gosh, we're dying from meat. Then they watch every blog and vlog and every movie, and then they change their mental maps, and in productivity they become an evangelist. And they're like, you gotta stop eating meat. Right? So we all do that, and that's what happens as a Christian. And what tends to happen in the productivity phase, what happened for me specifically, is you do what you see. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, how do I live out what I've seen? And most pastors at the time, and I mean even currently, would just teach you to know more Bible.
Yeah.
Right? Know Bible and share the gospel. And that's kind of the... You got to go on a mission trip, yeah. Right? So know, learn more Bible, share your faith, and go on some mission trips and build a house or something.
That's right.
You know?
Build a house.
And so you're talking about somebody who... I did it to the nth degree, right? I learned as much Bible as I could. I'm going to go to seminary. I'm going to learn from these seminarians. I'm going to go study under Bible teachers. Like, you name the person, I was going to go find them and learn from them. Mm-hmm. Productivity, I'm not going to go on a mission trip. I'm going to move to the most disenfranchised community in Memphis, Tennessee, and live in the hood and run from bullets and in order to preach the gospel. But what ends up happening is, no matter what, when you awaken, you grow, you're productive, you hit a wall. And everybody hits a wall, mm-hmm. and I hit my wall. Something, whatever that wall is generally something that is tragic or something that you're like, I need more mm-hmm. than what I've been doing or what I've been learning or what I've been growing. For me, that wall was, the loss of unarmed black people in America, right? I was like, hey, make sense of this. Yeah. So now I'm like, okay, maybe I need more awakening to deal with this. Let me, God, open my eyes up. Okay, this isn't working. Let me go talk to these leaders who helped me grow mm-hmm. and learn. And they were like, got nothing for you.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait. So then maybe I got to be more productive mm-hmm. and, just serve more, you know? And it was like, this isn't working. And that started the unraveling process for me. That's when I don't want to belabor where you're going with this, but coming from a broken family, mm-hmm. these, predominantly white men from seminaries were affirming me in ways I had never been affirmed before. Mm-hmm. I never had a father.
Yeah.
And so they were affirming me and making me feel like, okay, I'm somebody, I matter. But when they had no answers for the chaos that was happening in my community. As a matter of fact, when they were slanderous and saying, "Oh, you're like an ethnic Gnostic, you're worried about things that you know."
Yeah, it's not the gospel.
Just keep sharing the gospel.
Yeah, it's just a sin.
You're focused on politics.
Yeah.
I think that's when I began to question. Well, you're the smartest people that I know who understand the Bible, and if y'all are wrong about that, then what else are y'all wrong about?
Exactly. Yeah.
So. Long story longer. I just began to wrestle with what is true and what's not true. And in a last ditch effort to just kind of like say, God, I'm struggling here. I don't know if I believe you. I was fortunate to take a trip to Egypt. I went at a very inopportune time. I did not realize there were wars breaking out and bombs going off. It was chaos.
Yeah.
But while I was there, I had an archaeologist take me around, and they introduced me to this specific hieroglyphic where they said, well, this pharaoh let so many people go, and that's why he's not, heralded well amongst the pharaohs. And I was like, oh, like in the Bible. And the archaeologist was like, I don't know the Bible. I grew up Muslim, never read the Bible. I don't know any of the Bible story. I said, but you know this story, right? No, I don't know the story you're talking about. So I was like, all right, God, maybe something's going on. Yeah. Maybe you are more. And as I spent time in Egypt, and then I went to a church mm-hmm. after this moment, and then I started saying, wait a minute, there are perspectives I've never heard of. There are mm-hmm. books I've never mm-hmm. seen. Maybe this is a global faith, not a American faith.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then... maybe this is an ancient faith,
yeah.
not a Western church history
yeah,
faith.
Yeah,
and that's where the journey began
yeah.
to start reconstructing and saying, the foundation is right. Christ is the foundation, but this house that I've built is more American than it is biblical.
Yeah. 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 So just by way of summary for some of y'all, just to help with language, essentially, we all come a point in the time where what we've built can be so attached to people, traditions, and cultures, and we think that's God itself.
Mm-hmm.
And when those people wound us, we think God has wounded us.
Yeah.
Right? So as we're going through, let's just say, what was re-showing us that we're not in a post-racial society, that minority life is still under a threat and attack, we had to wrestle with the reality that this westernized spirituality didn't have answers for life, because most of that westernized spirituality was baked in a privilege. Mm. Mm-hmm. And when you have the privilege to not have to have an answer.
And by theologians, by
no,
the way,
yeah.
who
studied the scripture.
Had slaves
yeah.
and would preach the gospel
exactly.
simultaneously.
Yeah.
So it's not to say, it's two things can be true.
Yeah.
They were great theologians and they preached the gospel, led people to Jesus,
yeah.
and they beat their slaves.
Yeah.
Just two things can
yeah.
be true.
Yeah. And I just, since he brought that up, I wasn't going to bring it up. But I'm just going to go there, you know. When I learned that good theology is not what you preach and teach, it's what you live. Yep. Say that. So when I, in my studies, I came across a guy, George Whitfield. I'm not going to bag on Whitfield, but I am going to talk about the history. He was considered one of the great preachers and one of the greatest theologians. But then when I learned that he came over to America in the Georgia South, and he wrote back home for slavery to be instituted in the Georgia South so he can get slaves to build his orphanage. I want you to let that sit upon you to do the God's work. I want you to let that sit upon you. I need slaves to build an orphanage. So you're going to orphan people to build an orphanage. You understand what I'm saying? And I said, okay, Lord, we got to make sense of this. So he's going through his moment. I'm going through my moment. And I'm saying, Lord, you got to make sense of this. And I felt like the Lord said, that's not me. Mm-hmm. He goes, Frederick Douglass, mm-hmm. Christianity of the land and Christianity of Christ. Mm-hmm. There's always delineations. And so I want to say to you, because I know there are people in different spots in their faith journey, you have to build your faith apart from culture and traditions only. I want you to hear that. You have to build it apart from culture and traditions only. I'm not saying that traditions and cultures should be thrown out. What I'm saying, if you bake yourself in traditions and culture only, when that culture and tradition shows itself to be imperfect and not to be God, you will throw it and God out the window.
Mm-hmm. Another danger, because it, you know, and this is not to excuse anything that a George Whitfield or anybody has done, yeah. but it is to say another danger of baking in the traditions is that you find yourself a victim of the odorless gas, yeah. as we talk about.
That's
so
good, yeah.
so perhaps Whitfield was like, well, I didn't see anything wrong with it,
yeah.
right? So it was what everybody was doing. And we have a lot of odorless gas in our lives
yeah.
because of tradition, we're like, well, what's wrong with it? And
yeah.
you know, that's why it's important to understand the ancient Near Eastern Jewish perspective of the scriptures, because who knows, I can give you some examples, I may save them.
Yeah.
But you know, there's plenty of examples that mess us up today. I mean, just, you know, I don't want to. You said what?
You talking about idioms?
Yeah. I mean, but I don't want to steal any thunder from walking in the dust of Rabbi Jesus.
Yeah, we give her a shot. Yeah, yeah, right.
You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
yeah, we go
but at the end of the day, there's odorless gas that we breathe
yeah.
and we don't realize it, and we're married to tradition. And that's the wall that you're going to run into, where you have to make a decision of
yeah.
like, okay, well, I know God to be true.
Yeah.
So what am I? What's not being seen correctly?
Yeah, that's good. One thing I can give you all that was helpful is, we were talking about this at lunch earlier. If you read the Bible cover to cover, you will not come to the conclusion that Jesus and his followers are self-centered. Mm-hmm. You don't need Greek and Hebrew to understand that. What happens is, we get into cultures that go like, oh, it's not saying serve. You don't understand the context. And I go, no, it says serve. It's not saying consider one another better than yourselves. you got to understand the context. I'm like, well, there's a lot of context that's telling me not to be other-centered. Right? Yeah. So what I would say him and I did in God's grace was, all right, Lord, I'm coming back to this. And we like being around people. We're not just isolated people. Mm-hmm. So it's one thing to continuously read the scriptures, but it's another thing, Hebrews 10, you cannot forsake the fellowship of the brethren. So what we were looking for is community as well. Mm-hmm. So when you see this one community, say, okay, y'all are redefining some obvious things that doesn't sound like God's heart. Lord, where are the people who haven't bowed their knees to Baal?
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes that is harder to find than you realize, because you look at the majority and say, how is everybody believing this? Are we crazy then?
Yeah.
Right? And then the Lord will finally lead you to some people. So kind of talk about, you know, Ray Vandalin, our next guest, Lorster Verberg. Like, how did you come across that? How did that come across your path?
Yeah. So I remember one of my mentors at the time was heavy on disciple making, right? That was like his thing, was we got to make disciples. And I was at a church, and one of the pastors at the church had mentioned a guy who had a different vantage point on Caesarea Philippi, or, mm-hmm. or upon this rock I will build my church, mm-hmm. right? And he had this unique perspective, and I was like, where did he get that from? And I remember inquiring, and he told me. And so, you know, I'm a skeptic by nature, so I'm always skeptical of anybody. I'm like, let me see what this person's about. And I started digging through, and I was like, ooh, my mentor would probably like a lot of this guy's stuff, because he keeps talking about making disciples. The word he used was Talmudim. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this stuff is good. And I think I bought like a DVD. And
y'all know what DVDs are?
Y'all, yeah. That dates us. So I was on tour at the time. This is probably, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe 2011,
yeah,
somewhere around there. I'm on tour, and I have this DVD, and all the guys on the road with me, I'm like, hey, y'all, we do devotions on tour. We're going to watch this DVD. And we watch it, and my mouth is dropping to the floor because of the cultural. I'm a culture nerd. Yeah. I love sociology, culture, understanding what's happening, and he just starts throwing out all of these particular things about Ephesus and about, I mean, things I've heard my whole life about, you know, you must be hot or cold, or the Lord will spew you out, and I just assumed what that meant, like, oh, you're not hot, God's going to spit you out, and it was like, no, yeah, that's not at all what this means, and it's like, what? So now I'm like mesmerized, and I'm like, I don't know anything, so I go online.
That's how it is.
I go online, and I'm like, every DVD this man has, I'm buying it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I bought volumes, and I would just be sitting at home watching them. I'd invite people over, like, come on, we got to watch this DVD. Come and hear what you've never heard before.
Yeah, he's not lying.
So that was my entry point. I did not, though, it's interestingly enough, I just took it as somebody who saw some historical context. I didn't know the importance of the ancient Jewish Near Eastern vantage point. I just thought he was some kind of contextual guru.
Yeah.
And I loved what he brought to the table. The way Lois came into play was, I had long since kind of like, once 2015, 16 came about, I was done. I was like, y'all can have this Christian stuff. I'm off of it. And I remember I was self-medicating myself to death. I was on a flight from London back to the States, hungover.
Yeah, I remember that.
After a crazy night in London, and I'm in a group text with this guy and another friend, and I'm just, what's the word when you're just like a jerk? What's like, I'm trying to think. I was just like.
He was being very facetious.
I was ornery.
Yeah.
I was very ornery. And they're just talking about God and Jesus and the spirit man and like the Eastern following in the dust of rabbi. And I was like, man, Tupac, my rabbi. You know, I just, being ornery. But he wouldn't let up, and he just kept saying, and he was like, man, I'm just telling you, you know, this book is not that. Because I was like, I heard it all, man. I don't want to hear no more of these pastors, these American pastors, leaders. Yeah. And he was like, I'm just telling you, this book is different. And I was like, he's always recommended Goodreads. So I said, all right, I'll check it out. And when I got home and sobered up, I started listening, and it was like the scales were falling off my eyes, and I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what we've been missing.
Yeah, no, bless God. Yeah. Clap on that. Yeah, how much time we got?
2 minutes.
Okay, that's good. It's perfect. That's a good part. So listen, when we go to break and we bring Lois up, I want to give y'all this kind of like, this lens. So if Lecrae and I greet each other, you know, we have a lot of greetings, right? Mm-hmm. It could be like, yo, my guy, what's good? You know, he'll respond, all right? If you took a lot of our conversations, bottled them up, threw them 3,000, 5,000 years into the future, put them at a university, and then they study them and said like, hey, Adam asked Lecrae, what's good? See, good in the etymology means what's best for him, right? And we're like, no, we're in heaven at the time. We're like, no, that's not what it means. You know, it's a greeting. That's a lot how we treat Hebrew idioms. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you'll see a lot of people trying to use our greetings out of context, and we're like, yo, that's no, stop. Just stop it.
Yeah.
You're messing up the culture.
Yeah.
Right, and so the reason why I'm so passionate about the Hebraic context, the idioms, the sights, the sounds, the smells, what they were under, again, going back to the movie illustration, if you are passionate about loving people as Jesus did, and you don't know this, then I would ask the loving question, what are you living? Because the goal is not to just be heady, it's not to be puffed up. It's really to connect people back to God's love in the most potent way possible, mm-hmm. right? So we're going to talk a lot about that. We're going to talk about her story. We're going to talk about the importance of idioms, the importance of culture. And listen, we're looking at a version of heaven. I mean, as we were talking, we were like, y'all didn't check too many of the boxes, right? Y'all, it's like.
This church is not from Earth.
Yeah, I was like. I'm waiting for a white horse to come in. You know, I'm like, where's Elijah? You know, like, he about to appear. I'm like, come on, y'all, stop it. Who gonna yell cut in this thing? So appreciate y'all paying attention. We gonna take a break, and then we'll come back with Lois.
Thank you. Amazing.